justice for all.
Thank you. Can we have roll call, please?
Chair White?
Here.
Vice Chair Harmon?
Present.
Board Member Scholes?
Present.
Okay, agenda review. It's my understanding that one of the firefighters that we are going to be pinning a badge on this morning is out on a call, so I think we'll certainly move that to a time when he is present so we can honor him.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Do we know how long that might be? I know that we've got two who are going through the ceremony. I know they have family members here, so I didn't want to make anyone wait unnecessarily.
Captain Huey, have you monitored your radio? Are they available?
I haven't heard of them.
They're still on the call.
Well, do we want to do one at one? But I think they'd like to share the ceremony with each other.
For discussion, we certainly have the Penner family here.
What do you think, family? You guys want to wait till the other is here? Are you guys, everyone okay with that? I don't think we want to make people wait unnecessarily if you don't. It's a Friday. So just be sensitive to everyone's time.
Well, we can at least move on to the approval of minutes.
Okay. Well, then I think don't we need to move approval of the agenda as modified to postpone the presentations until blah blah and aye.
Second.
Motion made and carried. Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay.
Now we can go to the minutes.
And I don't have any corrections or concerns.
So, Madam Chair, I was not at the special board meeting, so I will be recusing myself.
Okay, well, then I will second.
And I'll move motion. Approval of the minutes for the special board meeting on September 22nd, 2017.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Recruits. Mm-hmm. Carries two to one with a recusal. Okay, well, we'll move on to community comments.
They're on their way.
They're available now.
They have to wait.
They're driving from Arroyo Grande.
They're driving from Arroyo Grande.
Okay.
The public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters not scheduled on the agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the board. The Brown Act restricts board from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. In response to the comments, the chair or the vice president may direct authority staff to assist and coordinate or coordinating with you. A board member may state a desire to meet with you. It may be the desire of the board to place your issue of matter on a future agenda item. Please adhere to the following procedures. Comments should be limited to 3 minutes. Comments should be addressed to the chair and directly to the board as a whole. Slanders, profane, and personal remarks against any board member, staff member, or members of the audience shall not be permitted. Thank you. Anybody want to come forward with public comment?
Good morning, Patty Welch, Arroyo Grande. I want to thank the firefighters for what they do 24/7. They are a great asset to our community, and we're in a real quandary right now, so I hope you guys just wish you guys the best in making this decision. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Anyone else? Moving. Close public comment and move on to consent agenda.
I would like to pull item one for a couple of questions on that.
So, Madam Chair, I'm going to recuse myself from this item as I am still a PG&E employee. This involves a grant that PG&E has graciously given to this organization. So, I'm going to step down and leave the room and let you all have the comments.
Okay. Leave that.
Oh, you've been watching?
Yes. Well, let's bring this up for discussion then. Right. Is that okay? Are we doing okay?
And the only question I have for general counsel then, if with Director Schultz's recusal, is it possible that we can move forward on this with a 2-0?
Yeah, I mean...
as long as it's...
The recusal, typically, you'd have to have a quorum, but under the rules of necessity, if you have to consider him as essentially a non-vote because of a recusal, to have a quorum for purpose of proceeding forward, you can do that.
Very good. Okay, thank you for that clarification. May I?
Yes, you may.
I do have a couple of questions on this, and it's a familiarity with exactly what Let's a Poll will do, because I think I'm getting it confused with another program that was also put in because we're moving forward on getting some efficiencies taken care of. So I believe that this opportunity was also a goal or a recommendation, part of a recommendation for the strategic plan. Is that correct?
It was, and it's also in our current fiscal budget as an objective for the second year in a row to review and amend our policies and procedures.
Okay, very good. And then the second question I have is this the program that is actually going to be used as a cloud-based server for shift scheduling? Is that also part of this program?
So two different solutions. The cloud-based crew schedulers, the name is CrewSense. And CrewSense is in, I would say, final stages of pre-deployment. We've got a group of employees that have made great progress on it. And the troops are using the app right now. We're trying to, as you do with software programs, we're trying to break it to see what we need to fix. So CrewSense is about to be launched. Lexapol is a different solution. Lexapol really started in the law enforcement community. Both police departments in our service area have been longtime Lexapol customers. This allows us to standardize policies and procedures, and Lexapol has a team of attorneys that review legislation and case law each year and make automatic updates to those policies. A real strength is we can program Lexapol to have our employees review and take compliance quizzes with the policy, so it'll really help with a compliance piece and standardization of everyone understanding our policies.
So with the CrewSense, then doesn't that lead to efficiencies then with scheduling related to what the battalion chief's responsibilities are for scheduling as far as the old school method?
CrewSense is really going to increase efficiency with the staffing officers, which are typically at the captain rank, and then they pull in the battalion chiefs when needed. So this solution is so automated that it'll really give that captain who's tasked with staffing some more time to focus on issues such as training and other matters with their crew.
Okay, very good. And then the last question I have has to do with how do you go about now making sure that everyone's proficient in the policies? Is it just an email, here's your homework assignment kind of thing, or based on the rotating shifts, how does that work now?
So great question, and Lexapol provides a great backup to this. So currently, if we were to push out a standard operating guideline, it would go out to everyone, and then it's gone. So we would assume that captains would review that SOG with their crews, and everyone was familiar with it, and then reach out to us if they had questions on it. This will... If there's a new policy, when an employee logs in to begin their shift, they're going to get notification that there's policies for them to review. Or just on a typical employee familiarization process, every month we can set up some policies for them to review and then take some compliance quizzing. And we get feedback that they've reviewed the policy and they've passed the compliance test.
And or is there an exchange if they have questions for clarity, for clarification on the policy? There's steps for that.
Always.
All right,
very good. Well, you've answered all my questions, so that's all I have on that. Ms. Chair. Thank you. Okay, so. Public comment on this matter. There it is. No public. Seeing nobody come forward, I move back.
Then I will move approval. And appropriate a grant from Pacific Gas and Electric in the amount of $7,500 to be used to acquire Lexapol, cloud-based policy and procedure solution. It's not only in our budget, but it will increase efficiencies.
Second, then. Moved and seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 2-0 with one.
You run recusal.
Thank you.
Okay. I think Mr. Leathers is going to bring Mr. Schultz back in. And Madam Chair, our missing firefighter is now here.
We will now back up and do the presentation.
Thank you. So these are always great moments for our fire family. Today we're going to celebrate the successful completion of probationary status with two of our reserve firefighters, John Penner and Stephen Hensley. I'd like to ask you gentlemen to both come forward for the oath of office. And families, take all the photos you want. Come up, get close.
State your name.
I, Stephen Hensley.
I, John Penner.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation
or purpose of evasion,
or purpose of evasion,
and that I will well and faithfully discharge,
and I will well and faithfully discharge
the duties upon which I am about to enter,
the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Congratulations.
So, John, if I could ask you, you can sit in my chair if you want, but we're going to focus on Stephen first.
Oh, man.
So, again, thank you for deciding to join us today.
Glad to be here.
It's been a pleasure to get to know both of these two. I call them the kids or the babies because I'm old. But they're great, and their energy is infectious. Stephen was born in San Luis Obispo and raised in Arroyo Grande, playing football at Arroyo Grande High School. When we sat down, Stephen shared that he was raised by his family with a real focus on embracing community service, and his earning the rank of Eagle Scout was a true testament to that commitment to service. So this passion to help others pointed Mr. Hensley to the fire service. He went to San Diego to pick up his emergency medical technician certification, and then graduated from the Allen Hancock Fire Academy's Battalion 137 in 2016. He plans to finish his education and pick up his paramedic certification. When he's not working, hiking, camping, fishing, snowboarding, and weightlifting are things. I'm always checking with him to make sure I'm on track, because I want to insert something random, but I won't. spending time with his family, that's what I forgot. Yeah. So I'm just really proud of your focus and commitment to the organization, and appreciate you being with us. And I'd like to ask Dad, Michael, to come forward for the badge pinning. Floor is yours if you have anything to say.
I just want to say thank you first to the department. I know we've been interesting, unique, challenging. Reserves, definitely challenging. I'm very appreciative of you all helping out, especially with my food allergy issues. I know that I've been a challenge, but I hope that all your hard work is shown in my improvements, and I'm very grateful for my family. All of y'all, thanks for being here, and thanks for your support and this process, and hopefully we'll be moving forward to full-time eventually. So, thank you.
Thank you. Right. Steven. Yeah.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. John, did you see that part?
Thank you so much.
So I don't have to bring you back. All right, you can sit down now. Thank you. John, join me. John was also born in San Luis Obispo, but grew up in Napomo, graduating from Napomo High School. After graduation, when he was trying to determine what he wanted to do for a career, he chose the fire service, largely to follow in his dad's footsteps in pursuing a career where he could work outdoors and help people. He graduated from the Fire Academy with Battalion 136 in 2015. When John's not here, you're thinking I made stuff up, right?
I saw it.
He works as a CrossFit coach at a gym in Napomo. Very active guy, and he's working on his degree at Cuesta College. Additionally, he plans to apply to paramedic school in the near future. So if you haven't figured out, John's one of those quiet guys. But he's always, see the smile? But he's always smiling. And the thing about John is, He just appears to help, whether I'm walking into a building or at our flu clinic that we just hosted. John was out there with clipboards just helping people without being asked, and I really appreciate that attitude. So at this time, I'd like to invite Dad, Mark, to come forward for the badge pinning. So I didn't do anything really bad.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank everyone in the department for all the support and knowledge they've shared with me this past year. It's been excellent getting to gain all the knowledge from everyone in this department, from their varying areas of expertise, and then also just like thank my parents for their support over these past couple of years, especially my dad giving me all the knowledge he has to in the process that I've been going through. So thank you.
All right, John. So congratulations. Really excited that you guys hung through and got through probation. If families want to go celebrate, we're about to resume a potentially boring board meeting that you might not want to sit through. I should use the levity, ma'am. Levity. Feel free to take off if you choose. So, again, congrats, and family, thank you for your support.
And from the board, we just want to say congratulations to John and Stephen. You guys are doing a great job and are just thrilled to have you on board. So, and I know, John, that you've got some big shoes to follow. I've worked with your dad at the Seattle team. Nice work.
Have a good day. That was the most John Penner's ever spoken.
We have no public hearings, no continuing business, so let's move it on to new business. Item A, consideration of draft request for proposal regarding a standard of coverage study.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a follow-up item to the board adoption of the 2016 strategic plan. As a result of the strategic plan and specifically a staff recommendation, there was interest in preparing a request for proposal for what's known as a standard of cover study in the fire service. And this is a report contracted with a paid consultant to really evaluate the department and look at several performance metrics within the organization, as well as determining what needs are based on community risk, population demographics, development, all of the things that we talk about on a pretty frequent basis. I have drafted an RFP for your review. I do want to share with staff that as I was doing the research and talking to other agencies that have gone through the process, they're typically cost is somewhere between $50,000 to $75,000. That amount is not currently in the Five Cities Fire Authority operating budget. And additionally, I would like to point out that many of the components that are called out in the RFP scope have already been completed in the strategic plan. So I will leave it to the board for questions and then direction to staff. Thank you.
John?
Where to begin? I think I've been on record as saying I wasn't convinced that we really need to do this because, I mean, strategic plans are, by the very nature, biased. We have a chief that we trust. So I'm just trying to hone in on, I know this was a board direction, but is there a way we can maybe scale this back? Because $75,000, and I know there's a dispute, a future discussion about staffing levels, like let's rather spend money on staff than to continue down this road on spending it on studies when a lot of the items have already touched on.
So, sorry, question?
No. Okay. The question really becomes, do we need this? Or if so, I mean, I can see maybe an overview of community risk assessment. So can we scale it back? Or do we need it? Or can we, could we scale it back if need be?
So I'll take a shot at a couple of answers to that question. One is we also have a FEMA-approved local hazard mitigation plan that includes a risk analysis that's been approved by both State Office of Emergency Services and FEMA. We do five-year updates to that plan. Related to that, the county of San Luis Obispo has applied for a grant to do a county-wide local hazard mitigation plan, which our member communities would all become a part of, which would be a nice total county-wide risk assessment and then community-specific plan. So between much of the information that's in the strategic plan, I took from our local hazard mitigation plan as far as risk identification. Secondly, could we scale it back? I met with the managers a week or two ago, and one of the managers suggested maybe a peer review of our strategic plan, sharing it with a couple of chiefs in this county and getting feedback. I've already shared it with a couple of them casually and gotten great feedback, but that's something I could do a request for a formal peer review, which would have a no cost, but that's what I have to share at this time.
Okay, thank you. I think those are my
comments. Chief, can you explain the significance of the fact that some of the elements from the strategic plan that was adopted by this board are already completed? You made that statement, and I'm not quite sure what the do you mean that because they're already completed that they would be removed from the scope of the RFP? What's the significance of that statement?
And I apologize, the draft does not have page numbers on it. But if you were to count the cover page, one, two, on page four, under scope of services, if you were to look at that document, I would say much of the legwork has already been done. So it would be that information would be available to the consultants so they wouldn't have to go out and formulate it for themselves. They would just validate it.
So,
I would think.
So that would be then perhaps less cost? Perhaps.
Potentially.
All right. I just wanted to make sure. Okay. So then I'll leave that for a comment related to why this is on the agenda. So I'll leave that. So I also had under the current state section, and this is might just be typo, but there's a word called said that it's PRUS, and I don't know if you mean process. That's just a little like cleanup, perhaps. I don't know.
Thank you.
All right,
fine.
Oh yeah.
You know, spell check didn't catch that because that's a word.
That's a word.
Thank you.
Spell check. I don't know. I have to go into comments then. I think those are all my questions. Thank you.
I don't have any questions, just comments. Do we want to see the public?
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be important.
Okay. Just open this up for public comment.
Good morning, PJ Ferguson, President of Local 443. I had spoken when this originally was brought up about what we believed to be an importance of having some kind of formalization to what it was, where the station locations were, the staffing levels were, what the community risk was. I believe Chief Lieberman has a strong plan moving forward in order to back that kind of statement up. I think one of the other items on new business might have some relevance is to this article itself or to this item itself from the union in order to hold the table and file at this point. We won't have any objection. We won't from the union side. I just felt compelled to bring that up. I think there's a solid plan going forward, but I wanted to offer that.
Very good. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay.
Well, I'll then go right into comments. I appreciate PJ Ferguson coming up because I do recall that part of my decision to move forward or at least get the RFP process to see where we would be at with it is because of the validation that seemed to be an important component and also an important component for the association related to that, and just based on the conversations we had related to the importance of a standard of cover, I know that was why I wanted to move forward, at least to get to this process. But with that being said, the fact that this isn't a in our current budget, the fact that there may be another way to get to the to where we need to be related to whether it's a peer review, certainly being able to piggyback off of the off of any county success at their level with the grant, then maybe we should take those opportunities to move forward on this where we won't need to be determining where we can find the money in the budget for this. I'm not seeing that this is a top priority right now, and I think it's a testament to the great work that was done by staff and everybody who had a hand in the strategic plan itself, because it was exactly what we were looking for related to the details and what the critical needs are, you know, moving forward for this agency in 5 years. So I would not want to support moving forward at this time and perhaps in incorporating this into budget considerations for the next budget cycle coming up. So that's where I'm coming from today. Thank you.
John?
I agree with all the comments that were just made, and I would just say that I think we've gone back, and it's the whole thing of the strategic plan. I think that was a very well thought out process, and everyone who was involved in that brought a lot of value to that. The plan identified where we want to go. It's now really a matter of, is it better to put together an implementation plan and take next steps? So I think given the comment we had from Mr. Ferguson today, as well as Barbara, all of your comments, I agree with 1,000%, and that maybe we need to just receive and file this, but maybe also give some direction to have a peer review of the strategic plan, just to have sets of eyes from other colleagues within the area. But I think we're all anxious to talk about some of the other items on the agenda today.
I would support that. Here we go.
I think we all three would support that. I'm just looking at the cost without any, you know, that's half a firefighter for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not budgeted. So I would also recommend that we receive and file
So why don't I just move that we receive and file the staff report and the draft standard of cover RFP document, and then that we also provide direction to staff to move forward with peer review of the strategic plan.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nothing carries. 3-0. Thank you very much.
And thank you for the work, by the way, of putting the RFP together. It's important information for us.
Thank you.
Moving on to item business, reserve firefighter program.
Thank you. Just want to make sure the board, we added a couple of graphics for you this morning. And folks in the public, if you don't have one, they're at the table in the back of the room. One of them's a GIS mapping strategy, and the other one's the cover page to our working budget for 16-17. So I'll be referring to those as I go through the staff report. So, I'm sorry. Okay.
Could you explain
these
a little bit?
Sure.
I'm dense.
I know, it reminds me of my days as a youth with a spirograph when I look at the calls for service by station. So that, first of all, that overhead map identifies the three fire stations. Actually, I'm looking at this one. It's called a spider map. This one. With all the lines.
Does everyone in the audience have a copy?
So, with the spider graph, which is all the lines, that's taking our three fire stations and overlaying several years of calls for service. What's important to note is that these calls for service predate our refined automatic aid agreement, where we stopped responding so far to East Arroyo Grande, and we stopped responding onto the beach. So, for example, if you look at the blue... if you look at the blue kind of the bottom of the map, that's showing a lot of call activity onto the Oceano Dunes, which we don't perform anymore. So as you look at it, you're really going to have to take into account where we're not running into East Arroyo Grande like we used to, and we're not on the beach. But what it really does from a GIS consulting perspective is it shows us that our fire stations, well, they might not be in the perfect location, they're in acceptable locations to provide service to these communities as a regional fire department. So I wanted to share that with you. And the second page, where it looks like it's got a heat gun map on it, this really ties to the hotspot report I prepare every year for you. And this is just, again, taking that data and looking at where's the density of the calls. Where are a lot of the calls happening in the service area? And like a thermal image, the red is the hot zone and blue is the cool zone. And someone's leaving. So when we look at this map, we can see kind of the spread of where the calls are, but the really dark areas are going to be those hotspot areas. It's going to be 1212 Farrell. It's going to be 365 Elm. It's going to be the Wyndham Residence. And then up on the Oak Park side, it's going to be 241 North Cortland. And then the Grand Avenue corridor. Obviously, you can imagine EMS calls and traffic collisions are usually on the larger streets. So I just wanted to give those to kind of frame our discussion today. Do you have any questions on the maps? Okay. The next document has the cover page to our draft budget that you adopted. And what I wanted to present to you was a slide that was in that presentation under the headwinds section. Folks in the audience, if you don't have one, that's what I'm looking at. And this is just showing a graphic of how I've reported to you consistently since I've been here that we're challenged on a more dramatic level in 2016 to attract and then retain reserve firefighters. As you can see, in 2016, we actually interviewed a bunch of people, but between physicals and live scans, we didn't end up hiring anyone. So as the staff report says on the first page, we've really tried to encourage the success and sustainability of this program, because this is truly the last vestige of us all being volunteer firefighters, right? So in the 90s, we saw that there was an increase in 911 calls. We saw that volunteers were working wherever they found work to support their families, so they weren't available, that state and national training standards were becoming dramatic. and development and an aging population. And all of those drivers compelled the communities to start hiring full-time fire staff in the 90s. We still hold on to this one part-time position. So on page one of the staff report, I've got a few bullets there. Basically, we've tried. So shortly after I joined the organization, the communities supported the notion of increasing the hourly wage, and we did. We visit the local fire academy to visit every recruit class to sell them on joining the Five Cities Fire Authority. We've sent letters to every state fire marshal approved fire academy in the state of California, telling them about the Five Cities Fire Authority and encouraging them to apply. And we've also transitioned to a continuous recruitment model. So yesterday, I believe, we received an application for a reserve firefighter. So instead of recruiting as needed, our door is always open for recruitment. Unfortunately, we're down to a roster of 7 personnel. And that's why I bring this report forward to you today. We're not alone in this struggle. It's just a sign of the times. The city of Atascadero has transitioned to full-time firefighters. Paso Robles has approved multiple additions to staff based on call volume and development. And the city of Pismo Beach worked with CAL FIRE to modify the contract to ensure that there was a 3-person engine company in downtown Pismo year-round. So I know Council Hale has sent you an attorney-client memo that has additional information in it. But just talking about safety, there's safety issues, we believe, to the community with year-over-year call increases. We're at 4.1% so far this year over last year. And the years prior to that, we were at 6%. So I assume that percentage is going to increase as we go through the year here. Our staffing levels have not been adjusted to account for an increasing call volume, an aging community, increasing development. You can see it all around us, and we are so grateful to see hotels going up because we know what that does for local community revenue sources and the medical office building on Fair Oaks. But with each of those additional commercial structures, we're creating impacts, not only to fire, but to police and public works and everyone else. But we have not adjusted for any of this growth since the inception of the fire authority. I've talked to you about, you know, the vast majority of our calls being emergency medical services calls. And I've talked to you about a transition to a new form of CPR that has amazing outcomes. High-performance CPR, or using a NASCAR model, pit crew CPR, was really based on a long-term study to see how did that patient, was that patient able to walk out of the hospital? Because there's a lot that can be done in the field to restore a pulse to someone, but we really wanted to see what was their neurological impact, and were they able to walk out of the hospital, and what kind of quality of life did they have? And this model, which came from Washington and Arizona, really focused on less clinical intervention, so less narcotics in the field and medicines, and really focusing on high-performance CPR for 20 minutes. And these are very fast compressions, and you need a crew to rotate through the compressions in order to get this done. When I was a volunteer, we would do CPR. We would put the patient on the gurney, and we would do CPR on the gurney and wheel them out of the house. The outcomes weren't great, and I think what we were doing is we were taking the patient who wasn't going to have a good outcome out of the home in front of their family. What we're doing now is we're working really hard for 20 minutes to determine if that person is going to be able to have a successful outcome when transported to the hospital, and our paramedics have been educated to have that difficult discussion in the home. Because the last thing we want to do is take someone who doesn't have a great survival chance and then burden the family with an ambulance bill and an emergency room bill, and the science is saying that this is a great determining factor right here. So great success with high-performance CPR. The downside with our current staffing levels is Engine 3 in Oceano is staffed with 2 people. So when they go into someone's home and it's a cardiac arrest and they're doing CPR, they will get on the radio and they will call for an additional engine to come to their location because you truly need 3 people to effectively do this along with the ambulance crew. Talking about the recent fire activity, and we've been busy with fires. The recent Traffic Way fire was a very recent example of where we are as an organization. There's national standards in the industry that tell you how many people you should have on the scene of a residential structure fire within 10 minutes. We're not there. That magic number is 15 when you're using a truck. And on a good day with an incident commander, we're at about 9. So we count on our automatic aid resources to supplement that staffing number. So the traffic wave fire, everyone went. So we had the 9 personnel there. One of our folks was actually transported to the hospital for possible dehydration and remains out on workers' comp pending a medical clearance. CAL FIRE resources responded to assist us, but again, they were coming from wherever their fire stations were or wherever they were deployed. And in May, when we had the commercial structure fire in Arroyo Grande, that was the textbook example of an automatic aid agreement is not a guarantee for resources. So in the middle of the night, when that commercial structure fire started in Arroyo Grande, CAL FIRE was committed to another commercial structure fire in Los Osos. We got additional resources, but there was a delay in getting those resources because the county was pretty thin. We actually received a fire engine from Santa Maria at one point. So these challenges continue to affect operations, staffing, and responses. They're also having a financial impact on the organization, and I'll kind of transition into talking to you about funding. So I'm on page 2 of the staff report if anyone's following along. So you can see how we quantify the budget for the Reserve Firefighter Program. So we need to cover 26,280 hours of shift time a year with the Reserve Firefighter. I'd like to introduce a couple of new pieces of information before I go any further. One of them is now that we've seen those hours, early this morning, the city of Arroyo Grande received an email from PERS, and PERS has made a determination based on a study of the PERS contract in Arroyo Grande. And remember, all 5 cities' fire authority employees are employees of Arroyo Grande, that the firefighter and reserve police officer positions are no longer exempt from PERS. There was an exemption where we didn't have to worry about hours worked. We were exempt. PERS has made that determination otherwise. Depending on which level of PERS these employees qualify, we're looking at an additional, I believe, 12.4 for PEPRA or 18.7 for classic employees that will be tacked on to the hourly rate. So to avoid paying PERS, again, if we're starting with a clean slate, we could work employees up to 1,000 hours. Once they hit a 1,000-hour threshold, then they're eligible for benefits. So if you look at the number of hours that we base our budget on, I would need over 26 part-time employees to provide the coverage that we're needing. And based on our recruiting and the graph that you see, that's just not going to happen. So we're going to, I'm sorry?
Did you say part-time or full-time? 26 full-time or part-time?
No, if I were to retain the reserve program as it is today?
26.
Yeah, and then we would probably need 28 for people that are unavailable or sick. So just that's just some additional information that came forward this morning. And there will definitely be more to follow on that. So what we've been doing is with 7 people, and like when I introduced Mr. Penner today, I told you he also works in a gym as a fitness instructor. $14 an hour at the high end, these people still need to work secondary jobs. Mr. Hensley has worked at a restaurant for quite a while. What we're doing when these people can't make a shift is we're backfilling them because we want to keep our staffing levels where they are. So below the calculation for the reserve budget, you can see what the standard rate is for a reserve firefighter, the overtime rate, and then I've got overtime rates for engineer and captain in there as well. I want to thank Ms. Malico for helping with this information in a pretty compressed time window. So what happens is we need that position filled. We don't have a reserve available to fill the shift. It's either going to be filled by another available reserve at an overtime rate, or we're going to bring in a career person at a significantly higher rate to take that position, which is impacting our overtime budget as well. That's the quandary we find ourselves in today. So we've done some, actually, Ms. Malico, with me watching, has done some great calculations where we can kind of forecast based on what we've spent as of 10/31/17 on the program. How much more funding do we have? How much more time do we have to fund the Reserve Firefighter Program? Well, it really depends, the variable, like I explained to you on the last page. Who's filling that open shift? If it's a reserve firefighter working at an overtime level, we're definitely going to expend the reserve firefighter line item quicker. So we have less than 8 months of funding as is. In a more extreme case, if we were to continue with career people filling that firefighter seat, we can play the number game, but it could be 5 months before we're totally expended in funds. So I've got some graphical information to walk through the board, and then I definitely am hoping to answer any questions you have and then end up with some direction. If you look at the tables on starting on page 3, the first box is where we are today. So where we are today is we have 3 personnel in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, and we have 2 people in Oceano. The firefighter position, this is the reserve firefighter program. The box below that is where the 5-year strategic plan identified career employees. So that was the 5-year end game, if you would. If we turn the page and we begin a transition to full-time employees, remember, for every 1 firefighter position with a shift-based business model, you're looking at 3 employees. So 3 employees provides 1 continuous firefighter position at 1 station. So in this first scenario, what we're attempting to illustrate is, let's begin the transition to full-time employees. We start with 3. We still maintain the reserve program as best we can and staff the remaining station with reserves as a transitionary period. The next box, well, the numbers don't change. You just see we've added another 6 full-time employees, and we're now at 9 full-time firefighters. Again, Station 3, based on everything I've shared with you about safe crew sizes, we still do not have an engineer position at Station 3. So the quandary today, as I've started to tell you, is we're unable to fill open firefighter shifts. And to fill those to maintain staffing levels, we're spending more money than budgeted to satisfy those shifts. So what I've brought forward for the board is in the next section of boxes with the orange label is what does a temporary fire station closure model look like? So with the current staffing model, if we were short on personnel, we could close 1 station and move the existing personnel over to maintain staffing levels of 3. Another option, if you go back to current state with Oceano with 2 people, if a firefighter was unavailable at Station 3 in Oceano, I'm not very supportive of this, but you could strip a firefighter from the Grover Beach station and send that person to Oceano and you'd be running 2-0 staffing at 2 stations. We need to maintain 3 people at Station 1. Again, going to scenario number 2, this is a transition to 3 full-time employees and still holding onto the reserve program. The yellow box below there, where it says allows for squad staffing, when we start seeing 4 or more people at a fire station, we do have the ability to split the crew, keep them assigned to each other, but split the crew. And a squad concept would be a smaller vehicle responding first out to EMS calls, leaving 2 people behind with a truck, for example, at Station 1. And if there was an incident, the squad would catch up and form up that 4-person company. The third scenario on the next page shows us with 9 full-time employees. It still shows a temporary station closure because we're lacking that engineer position. But these are all illustrations of what could be done. But I'm definitely here before the board, as I have been for 3 years, but I'm now saying we're at the tipping point in terms of operating budget constraints related to this program. So the fiscal impact, obviously I've explained in general detail conceptually what our risk is this year. To hire a full-time firefighter, we're estimating, and it truly is an estimate, about $100,000 a year. So that 1 firefighter position is actually 3 people or $300,000 a year. And then I've got the second phase of hiring 6 full-time firefighters, and that's how I got $600,000. If we were to move forward in any way, and you've probably seen in the alternatives, obviously we would be working with Local 4403 to amend the Memorandum of Understanding to accommodate the firefighter classification. Once phased out, that reserve firefighter line item of $368,000 would obviously provide an offset, one-time offset, when it went away from the operating budget. The graphical representations that I brought to you late, I apologize they were late, but I just thought of them this morning, and I think they really support the the discussion that I've presented so far. So that concludes my staff report.